Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello! Welcome back to our series on the TCM Classic Film Festival. I'm your host, unmitigated cad, Lady P. No relation to Master P. And joining me today is the Weenie King herself, Miss Kristen Sales.
Glad to be back.
All right, we are on day 4, the final day of the fest.
Aww.
I know.
Cue sad noises.
Yes, indeed. Actually, by the time you're hearing this, it will likely have ended.
Right.
But we'll, before we sign off, we just want to give you a final wrap-up of the goings-on and just talk really briefly about some more of the highlights that we've watched and experienced. But let's kick things off with the thing that we were most looking forward to.
Saturday night
going into the fest.
Entertainment. Yeah. The Nitrate print of Powell and Pressburger's nun psychodrama, Black Narcissus.
Yeah.
So we both lined up absurdly early, but not that absurdly, because it's not like we were like the first people there. There were people
number
there.
7, which is really impressive for the hottest ticket.
Right.
In the place, but
right, but it was a hot ticket. It was entirely sold out, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's like, it's Black Narcissus. Like, it lived up to, it was as beautiful and painterly, and the Nitrate had a shimmer and a life and a depth, and just the shading was more intense.
Yeah,
you know, because the Blu-ray of that movie looks incredible, but it looks like a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like film.
Yeah.
And what we saw on Saturday night did.
Yeah.
So it lived, I mean, it was as good as you wanted it to be, in my opinion. It was fantastic. And it was a great, I mean, it's not a comedy, and it's not a movie that people like really audibly react to. It was quite a quiet screening, which at a festival that's focused on comedy is a little bit different. But it was appropriately chilly, actually, in the evening when we were waiting in line, because Black Narcissus, there's wind in every shot of Black Narcissus, which a gentleman that I was standing next to in line while we were killing time, he said, "Have you seen this before?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I saw it years ago on DVD." And he's like, "Look for the wind. There's wind in every shot, even the interiors. There's some sort of wind." And he was right. And while we were waiting in line, there were Santa Ana winds blowing down the corridors of the Egyptian lobby and everything, and it was quite chilly inside the theater. It was very atmospheric.
Yeah, set in the mood.
Yeah.
I will say, I guess I should confess that...
Oh. You're gonna... Listeners, get your hate mail ready.
Yeah. So I lined up 2.5 hours early for this movie, because I wanted to make sure that I got in. And I get through about 10 minutes, and I start feeling my eyelids start to close, and my hands start feeling extra heavy.
It was pretty late at night, in your defense.
By the time we started watching it, it was about 9 p.m., I would say.
No, it was later than that.
Was it about 9:30?
9:30?
Yeah. No, you're right. By the time we actually loaded in, it was 9. By the time the film started, it was 9:30. And this is after going for several days straight. And so, as beautiful as it was, I'm not sure I got the full experience. In fact, I know I did not experience it the proper way, the way that I had intended to experience it. But the parts that I did see were beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I had seen it before kind of casually. My roommate had it on in the background. So I think I, at this point, just need to sit down at a reasonable hour and watch the movie and fully experience it.
Right, because it's so subtle, and so many stretches of it, especially later, are completely silent, and they really require a rapt attention. It reminds me, actually, reminded me a lot this time of Vertigo.
That was my impression from what I picked up. Yeah, it did remind me a lot of Vertigo.
Vertigo would be influenced by this.
Sure.
This
yeah.
Film. Yeah. Well, there's no doubt. I mean,
But I guess
the first time I had seen it, I didn't make that connection.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of overlap.
With the nuns and the falling and the spoilers, you know.
Yeah. I think this is a sort of a Hitchcockian Powell and Pressburger movie.
Sure, yeah. So. I mean, it's stunning.
Yeah.
And worth seeing. Worth seeing, and if you can, see the Nitrate.
Yeah.
Come out to L.A.
David Ferrer's thighs and Nitrate. I mean, boy.
I mean, yeah, let's get down to business.
It was almost too masculine. I feel like a lot of people, there were almost like spontaneous pregnancies in the theater, just in terms of like how much of David Ferrer's body was on display. It was almost like, please, mm-hmm. sir. Cover yourself in the tiny little ponies and everything. Oh, boy. I mean, there's just a lot to admire.
Yeah, yeah.
In Black Narcissus.
Deborah Kerr spends basically the entire movie covered from head to toe.
Right. So as showmen, as, you know, artists, but also showmen who are interested in the bottom line, I feel like Michael and Emmerich put their heads together and were like, look, all of our female leads are totally cloistered and we only see like an oval of their face the whole movie. Deborah Kerr, one of the most beautiful women in the world, don't see much of her.
No.
We need to get some skin in here somehow. Can we get, even though they're like on top of a Nepalese mountain or wherever it is they are, and it's supposed to be, the winds are supposed to be blowing, you know, frigid air. David Ferrer is like, decked out like he's living on the equator. Like, he has two shirts, one pair of shorts, like the rattiest sandals, and then just like a hat with a bunch of feathers on it and a pipe. And he just does not ever, like, he's just like, oh, he's just straight chilling all the time. And he's just like walking into the nunnery, like, no shirt.
Yeah.
Look here, you broads.
Glorious.
I'm walking in here. I'm not putting a shirt on. I don't care what kind of nuns you are.
Bless
him. I mean, Mr. Dean is just, you know, he's a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He's a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Sure is.
So I feel like we've properly sold this movie. If the Nitrate doesn't get you.
Do you need to sell Black Narcissus?
I don't think so.
I mean, I guess among the Powells and Pressburgers, it's not as well loved as maybe some of the other stuff.
But it's not as easy
or comfortable or entertaining a watch. It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
And subtle. Yeah. And about, like, repression and madness. And, you know, it's not the life and death of Colonel Blimp. Like, it's not a movie like that.
Right.
But I feel like if people haven't seen it, and maybe have seen some of their other work, it's like, what are you waiting for? Yeah.
Indeed.
Go out and see it.
Yeah. Okay. So we also watched a few other movies.
We did. On Sunday.
Yes. So, Let's talk cock of the year. Let's talk cock.
Shall we should have led with that, actually.
Yep. Damn. Let's talk cock.
Yeah.
I mean, I figure we kind of already were.
We were.
And not so many words.
We were. Yeah, from one cock to another.
Yes.
Okay, so Sunday morning started bright and early with the cock. Obviously, cock of the year. So cock of the year is an Academy restoration that it's pretty brand spanking new. I know they showed it at the Academy last year, I want to say. I did not go to that, and I sort of, having seen it now, regret not going then, but it was also really wonderful to see it during the fest. So what happened was they found some extant film elements of this movie from 1932, Howard Hughes produced comedy, Air Force, or airplane comedy, as you might expect from Howard Hughes. So they found one element that was the uncensored version, because when it came out in 1932, the production code basically like tore all of the best bits out of it because it's extremely raunchy. And so the Academy came up with an uncensored print, but it didn't have a soundtrack on it. But the second element that they came into possession of was the soundtrack, but it was the censored version of the soundtrack. And so they tried to put that together, and then they went back to the original script. And so they found the script of the uncensored version, so they were like, okay, great, how do we put this all together? And so what they did is they hired contemporary actors to mime to record the dialogue from the uncensored version and put all three of those elements together. So it's a restoration, it's a piecemeal restoration. But I feel like the contemporary actors, even though you could tell, you know, and they put in the print, they put a little icon at the bottom of the screen so that you could tell when you were hearing the recreated uncensored version. It's almost like a follow the bouncing ball type stuff. But it was actually really fun because you were able to be alert. You were like in on the knowledge of the restoration and it sort of added a participatory fun
and
element to it.
It was like, look out, something racy is going to happen.
Exactly. It was like a little signal, like, ooh, your ears perk up. No, but this is an exceptionally, like, ribald sexy movie. Yeah. Like, it's about this, like, horn dog World War One pilot who is, you know, tearing his way through Italy and all the women who live in Italy. And also about this, like, Mata Hari-type crazy sex bot who is actress. She's, like, a sexy actress. She's banished from France personally by representatives from all of the Allied countries because all of their generals and officers are getting so distracted by how hot she is that they're not, like, taking care of their troops. Actually, the opening scene of this movie is so funny.
It's true.
Because it's, like, the United Nations getting together to, like, yell at Billy Dove, who is a sexy actress, and just be like, look, Billy Dove, you're too hot. If you leave France and leave all of our generals and officers alone, we will, like, award you a Purple Heart. It's funny. And so she goes to Italy and then finds this guy who's, like, the Don Juan of the area and then just proceeds to, like, mess with him. Mm-hmm. Just, like, total like, cock of the air tease, if that's an acceptable pun, for about 40 minutes. There's, like, a very extended sequence where she's just, like, it's, like, foreplay, but, like, the most tortured foreplay, and this poor guy is just, like, it's really funny, though. Yeah. It's really funny.
It is delightful. There's a great gag involving a can opener.
We shouldn't say more than that, because it's legitimately very well-constructed. Yeah,
if you have an opportunity, I highly recommend checking out Cock of the Air. And I don't know how. It's not available on DVD, correct?
I don't believe so. Hopefully it will be. I don't know. Yeah.
I think I did hear that, but I could be wrong.
I think when it becomes available, if you're a fan of, like, sexy precodes, it's a must-see.
Yeah. And Billy Dove, who you mentioned, she wears some pretty fantastic dresses.
Like, this is, like, décolletage for the ages. Yeah. This is, like, these necklines are, wow, they would be illegal today.
Yep. we won't say more.
No, but it was an unexpected. I didn't expect it to be as entertaining or as funny as it was. So that was a really nice thing to kick off Sunday morning with.
Yes. And then we followed it up with Lured.
Lured, which is not a comedy.
No, is it? But it's, well, no,
it's a hybrid comedy.
I mean, you would think it might be. It does star Lucy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lucille Ball.
Lucille Ball. In, like,
directed by Douglas Sirk.
Right, and then it gets crazier from there, because who's the male lead?
What? I'm so glad you asked. It's George Sanders.
Right.
Only the greatest actor who's ever lived.
Okay, so you got, like, an early American film from Douglas Sirk, and it's, like, a hybrid, like, noir detective comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Lucille Ball is, like, the spunky lead showgirl who gets roped into being a girl detective for Scotland Yard to, like, help find a potential serial killer who abducted, like, her best gal pal friend. Mm-hmm. It's wild, dude.
Yeah.
It's so wild.
Yeah.
And then, like, also Boris Karloff is in it.
Right. And I think that was actually maybe the highlight of the screening is they brought Sarah Karloff,
his daughter, to introduce it.
She was lovely.
That was a great discussion with her.
Yeah.
Because it's like, first of all, your dad's Boris Karloff, that's rad. I'm sure she has tons more stories. But she was just like a delightful old lady that was just like real sassy and had great recollections of her dad. And Boris Karloff sounds like he was like a real proper English gentleman that was just, he was just a nice guy.
Yep.
And he's so good. Like, you can see the seeds of the more comedic performances that he would give later in his career, like for Roger Corman. Like, there's a lot of that in the DNA of his performance in Lured, and it's like it's a cameo basically, but he's wonderful in it.
Absolutely. So let's move on to Palm Beach.
We're getting to the meat.
I think so. Palm Beach Story.
Palm Beach Story.
Oh my god, so good.
I mean, this is like, brace yourselves for the hotness of this take, but Preston Sturges. Pretty good.
Pretty solid. Yeah, it turns out.
I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this guy.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty good at making movies.
Yeah, I think of all the films we've seen so far at the fest, would you say this is the most acclaimed, the most widely seen?
I don't know, because I hadn't seen it before.
Okay.
But I'm probably in the minority. I would say that of the films that I personally saw at the fest, this probably most typifies the theme.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of the anarchic classical Hollywood screwball movie that you would associate it with the theme of comedy in the movies for the TCM Film Festival. Right. I feel like it was a very on-brand decision to screen this.
Yeah.
And it played at the big former Chinese theater and slayed the house. Yeah. Like, everyone was just there for it. It was such a crowd pleaser.
Absolutely. I believe it's the only film we've seen at the fest that is on the Sight and Sound list.
Is it?
That's any indication.
Do you recall what number it is?
It's pretty low.
It's pretty low. Yeah. But there is a Preston Sturges comedy on the greatest.
Absolutely.
Is it the only Preston Sturges?
No, I believe Sullivan's Travels is also
Sullivan's
on there.
Travels.
And Lady Eve is on there. So he's all three of them. I believe so, yeah.
So the critical darling, Preston Sturges, but also played really well to the audience.
Yeah.
So that's a nice kind of commingling of high and low culture or popular culture.
I'd say the theme of this episode was just hot man bod.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we don't get to see enough of Mr. McRae.
Yeah, I have a theory that if Joel McRae is going to be in your movie, you need to get his skin on screen for you need to orchestrate some pretense for at least, you know, a little bit of leg if you're not going to go full shirtless. Sure. I mean, to be fair, this is a little bit older Joel McRae. I mean, not old Joel McRae. It's like 42, but it's not like early 30s, Babe McRae.
Yeah.
But we still could have seen...
I wouldn't have complained.
Something.
Yeah.
I feel like, can we write a sternly worded letter or something?
We did almost kind of see his butt.
Almost, but that was a tease because in this, if you're familiar with the film, you know the scene where he's running out of the house with a duvet cover around the bottom half of himself. And it's like, you know what? I guess maybe a lesser director would have, had a butt shot. But it's kind of like I feel like you need to give the people what they want a little bit.
I will say also that despite the lack of skin, it's kind of a sexy movie.
You think it's sexy?
I think it's a little sexy. They're all undressing and stuff all the time.
I don't know. I think there are sexier movies. This was a little bit more. I think the characters are a little too ridiculous to be sexy.
Interesting. I thought they were pretty sexy. Even more so than his other films, any of his other films, really. Like,
what do you mean, Lady Eve is very sexy?
I don't find that one that sexy.
What?
Yeah, it's also got a lot of snakes. I'm not a huge fan of that movie, to be honest. I love Stanwyck in it, but
I don't know how you can have a movie with Barbara Stanwyck, 1941 Barbara Stanwyck, and not say that it's sexy.
I mean, she's sexy, but I just like
that's what I'm talking about.
So awkward.
But he's also sexy.
I mean, yeah, but he's been sexier in other things.
I can't believe you're like...
I'm sorry. I think Palm Beach Story is sexier.
Wow.
I know.
Readers, I mean, address your hate mail.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Or just, you know, if you think Lady Eve is sexier, if you think Palm Beach Story is sexier. Or Dark Horse, I guess, Sullivan's Travels.
I guess if you think
Sullivan's Travels is sexier.
You know, I guess there's a case to be made.
Yeah. Call in. Our phone lines are lighting up.
Sure. All right. Well, on that note, I just kind of want to touch base on some of the stuff we talked about in our preview show, and we've sort of touched on it throughout the series, is just what it means to go to a movie fest dedicated to classic film and the preserving of classic film, and to go and watch a bunch of comedies, and then did they actually stick with the theme this year?
Well, I think it's up to us, right? We made our own schedules. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been very, very easy to only go to like 30s through 50s classical Hollywood comedies and really laugh a lot. Like we could have tailored our schedules like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we made the decisions that were right for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think totally. I think there were totally that amount of options in terms of comedy.
Yeah.
But also, like, high anxiety and also speedy and also, you know, a lot of other stuff.
Sure.
And Born Yesterday and whatever you want.
Yeah.
And Best in Show, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
which we didn't go to.
Right. Well, but we've seen it.
Yeah.
I did end up talking to some people in line for a couple of the screenings and just asking what they thought of the theme. And everyone's always a little bit cynical about why they bother to pick a theme because so many things don't adhere
Right. There's a theme, but then there's also, like, standing entries, like discoveries or restorations or the talks or documentaries or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, you have to pick a theme, but at least, but it's only going to be, like, at most a quarter of the movies adhere to the theme.
Right.
But I like the fact that they do it thematically because it gives you kind of a, I think it actually is more important for the mood of the festival. You know, like when the theme was musicals, people were like singing and dancing, mm-hmm. you know, like walking to and from screenings because they were in that mindset. And when the theme was style, you know, that which could be defined as fashion or it could be designed as defined as set dressing or whatever, I think it like made people sort of pay attention to those things in whatever movie they were mm-hmm. watching.
Yeah.
And so, like, you would be watching a 30s movie, but instead of watching for Dietrich, you'd be watching for Travis Banton. And I think it just kind of guides what people's expectations are and where their focus is. Mm-hmm. And I think that it did the same thing for this year for comedy.
Sure, yeah. And as we've been saying, I was really grateful to have a fest where I am sort of being encouraged to go and check out comedies that I might not have otherwise seen, like... As you mentioned, there was a Cock of the Air screening earlier last year, but I didn't feel like I needed to go check it out. But here, you know, yeah, I'm going to go see a funny pre-code.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I have this opportunity, and it's fantastic.
Right,
because
you're, like, vibing on that already.
Exactly, yeah. And it played perfectly with Palm Beach Story. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see the natural progression of...
Sure, yeah, of, like, that sort of madcap sort of... A little sexy, yeah. innuendo-ish kind of mm-hmm. film.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we've watched two Lubitsch films this fest.
Uh-huh.
Ginger Rogers, Precode. Just, I think those have ultimately been the highlights. And then that's not to say that, you know, Last Picture Show isn't a beautiful, wonderful movie, because it absolutely is.
Yeah, or like Black Narcissus.
Or Black Narcissus,
which is the antithesis of a light, frothy comedy.
Exactly, yeah.
But it was still a wonderful experience.
Absolutely,
and I think it's important, at least for us, in our schedule, to have a variety of stuff that we're seeing.
Yeah.
The other upside, I feel like, to the theme of comedy this year is there were a lot of shorter movies. Mm-hmm. And I am all about that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
From 70 to 90 minutes, boy, what a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. If we can just
keep... We gotta get back to that.
If we can just keep it there.
Yes.
I mean, there were some long movies screened.
Sure.
Stalag 17. Mm-hmm. I don't know what
Last
else.
Last Picture Show
Last
was
Picture
short.
Show, The Jerk, with the book signing, was also rather long in a block. And it's like, that's great if you want to go and see that stuff. Like, albeit. But it's really nice to have a full schedule of... short 1930s films where you don't have to think very hard and you just can go and have a good time.
It's true. And that was, I think, consistently one of our comments walking out of the theater was like, that ended at the perfect time.
Absolutely. God, knowing how to end a movie, I mean, is a real skill.
Yeah. And Palm Beach Story ending.
Oh,
good
my
Lord.
Like I said, I had never seen it before. First of all, the beginning of that movie is a stroke of genius, because talk about starting in the middle of things, and really sets an incredible pace that, for the most part, does not let up. I mean, that's a masterpiece of pacing in and of itself. And then the end of this movie, where did this even come from? It's outrageous. I literally, like, started applauding at one certain line, because I was like... Because I had not seen the movie when Joel McRae says that line, which I won't say, and all about, but it's like very self-reflexive line. I thought that was just a line, right? I did not know it was going to cut to the actual ending of Palm Beach Story. It blew my mind. Mm-hmm. I mean,
mm-hmm. It's perfect.
It's one of the great endings, I have to say.
Yeah. That's spectacular.
The construction of it is so admirable.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I guess, restraint it takes to not... When you have that level of talent, to keep it short and sweet and to know you have a beginning, middle, and end and stick with it, what a rare quality. Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, Press the Surge is pretty good.
Yeah. Solid.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I just feel like going on a bender right now. I just need to binge all the Sturgis.
Press the Sturgis movies?
Yeah.
We're just going to stay in this hotel room and actually just watch. We're not even going to do anything else today. We're just going to watch Press the Sturgis movies on a TV.
I'd be all right with that. But there's also, we got lots to do.
Yeah.
But anything else that we wanted to discuss before signing out for this year?
I don't know. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Try to make it out to TCM Fest one year if you can.
Yeah.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
We have a great year every time, and it's been just wonderful to, like, talk to people online and get their stories of, like, it's a first time at the fest, and they have a little ribbon that says, I'm a first timer, and so you can strike it up with them, or if they have any questions, you can answer. Or the people who have, you know, buttons, and you see their button, you're like, oh, I love that, and then you just start talking to them. Or, yeah, I mean, I love seeing familiar faces, because you'll run into people that you had met, and maybe you don't remember who they are, but you remember that you met them. Yeah. And it's just nice to, you know, people wave at each other. Absolutely. And it's a fun, friendly vibe. Absolutely. And the weather's been beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really kind of nice Southern California weekend, and everything for me, this festival has run really smoothly.
Yeah.
I think it's been very well, it's always well thought out and planned, but the execution this year has been particularly smooth.
Okay.
I think they've done a really good job, especially, I do want to give a shout out to the TCM programmers, because in years past, some of these very popular pre-code films were put in smaller theaters, which resulted in a lot of sellouts and some, you know, grumpy people because they weren't able to see the things. So a lot of those type movies, which they know are popular, they moved into the Egyptian, which is a higher capacity theater. And I think they finally figured out the exact chemical formula of what movies to put in which venues, which has personally resulted for me in a very smooth festival. I hope other people have had a good experience too, because I feel like they really picked the right venues for the movies.
Yeah.
And It's been great.
Yeah, I've basically seen everything I wanted to. The only thing I had to miss was Theodore Goes Wild, and that was because I had to work on this podcast. Hope you enjoyed.
we can do a Theodore Goes Wild episode later.
Yes, yes. But on the whole, I've just been very pleased. As I said, I waited 2.5 hours in line for Black Narcissus, and I had a great time because I got to chat with people who are also...
Right.
Really, really eager to go watch a nitrate print.
Right. It's not like, like an interminable wait where you have to, or Comic-Con where you have to sleep over and it's like, you feel gross.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that time goes really quickly.
Yeah.
In terms of waiting in line, there's some of the best times you have at this festival are waiting in line just because you can have really fun conversations.
Yeah. I live for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I started this podcast, so I could talk to people about classic movies.
Yeah.
I could have just come here.
Yeah, it's kind of just a spiritual extension of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Because all we're doing is having the same conversations basically that we have with the strangers and the other people in line about the movies.
Yeah.
Because you start talking about something and then the person sitting in front of you turns around and says, oh, you were in that screening too? And then you just start talking about it. I mean, or you start talking about a certain actor and somebody says, oh, they're my favorite, or... You know, because you're hearing other people's conversations, and so you say something, and people say, oh, sorry for chiming in, and then you're like, no, it's great, and then you become best friends with those people, and you see them again throughout the fest, and it's charming, because everyone here really wants to, that's what they want to do. They want to watch classic films, and they want to talk about them.
Exactly. All right, well, I think that's a pretty good place to sign off. If you want to talk about classic films, in line or out, you can find me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you can find Sales on Twitter. I'm at FlixWise. Sales, you are?
I'm at Sales on Film. Sorry about all the cock jokes.
That's all right.
Actually, I'm not sorry.
No, yeah. and also we're on, FlixWise is on Facebook at facebook.com/FlixWise. And we have a website, FlixWise.com. But before you do all of that, please go and check out our iTunes feed and subscribe and rate us. Tell the people at Apple that you dig the podcast. And if you've been digging this series, come give us a shout, let us know. And if you have suggestions on other films you'd like us to cover, I'm always open to talking about basically anything that anyone wants us, any requests. We're open to any requests.
Yeah, but also just like if you enjoyed TCM Fest, come and talk to us about TCM Fest online, because we'd love to do that as well.
Exactly.
We're here, we're having a great time.
Exactly. All right. I guess until next year.
Until next year.
All right. Done.